श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री राधा गोविंद की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवत की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण Pranam, good morning to all of you. Sriman Krishna Chandra Prabhu ki jai. So, I thank you very much for your nice words of introduction and the homework you have given us. And I was thinking while hearing you about some words of my Guru Maharaj, because you were speaking about you have to sit in front of the verse and try to be present in the presence of the verse, basically, which is not different from Krishna, since the Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna. 10th canto in particular is described as the smiling face of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Different cantos represent different limbs of Krishna's divine body. 10th canto is his smiling face. So facing a verse like this is exposing ourselves to Krishna's charming smile, basically, and try to decipher what his smiling is trying to tell us. And as Krishna Chandra Prabhu invited us, try to become part of the Bhagavatam by writing your own prayer, your own commentary to the verse. My Guru Maharaj once told, there is, in the whole Bhagavatam, there is one blank page. And that blank page is for you to fill with your own testimony of devotion. Because the Bhagavatam is not just a book to read. It's a world to enter. It's a reality to participate in eternally. So there's one page waiting for all of you. So you write your own story in Krishna Lila, in the service of Sri Hari. So I appreciated Krishna Chandra Prabhu's invitation in that light. It's a way of starting to conceive the Bhagavatam in a different way again. like an open door that is inviting me to enter, like a portal. It seems a book, but it's a portal. It's Krishna himself opening a portal for us to enter. So it's important to keep these things in mind every time we sit to read or to hear Bhagavatam. The portal is opening, and we should open ourselves to the open portal. So that's it. Let's go to today's portal. We can replace the word verse with portal from now on. Today we'll see portal number 30. But as usual, before that, let's make a brief summary of yesterday's portal, 29. Where Brahma spoke about a slight trace of grace. So I'll briefly read the verse in English directly, some words, and then we go to today's portal. Brahma said, O Lord, only one who is favored by even a slight trace of the grace of your lotus feet can understand the glory of you, Bhagavan. Anyone else, despite being eminent seekers who try to understand you for a long time, are unable to know you. Shri Brahma Ji Ki Jai. So, as I mentioned to you, up from that verse, yesterday's verse on, we are starting a new section in the wider section of prayers. So after lots of Siddhanta, lots of philosophy, if you will, we are beginning a new section. In last verse, or some acharyas may say in today's verse, it's kind of in between. Where Brahma starts to point, after speaking about Siddhanta, start to focus on Bhava. So from foundational knowledge to ecstatic aspiration and emotion. And he pointed to his aspiration by referring to Krishna as Deva. Maybe you remember the explanation we gave yesterday of Deva. Connection to Div, to play. Krishna is a playful God who only plays. And Brahma aspiring to enter into that play forever, to write his own page in the Bhagavatam. He already has a few pages, but he wants to write another one from the perspective of Sakyaras. So Deva means also he who shows or reveals everything. So Brahma already had experience of that till now. Krishna revealed to him so many things. Even that God comes from me. Narayan is my Anga. But also he who plays in Braj. So that's where Brahma wants to go. So this verse basically makes the point that our path is a path of grace. And as Krishna Chandra Prabhu said the other day, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't make any effort. Grace doesn't promote laziness. We don't want to pray for lazy grace or something like this. My Guru Maharaj...
He has a very good term in German.
For that?
Yeah.
Once my Guru Maharaj said that we should make an effort as if all our success will depend on our effort. But knowing deeply that everything depends on grace. So you follow, there's two things should be there. No? It's not that grace becomes an excuse for laziness. The contrary, grace is so big and incredible that I try to give my best to reciprocate something. I will be our 50%, if you will, as we spoke the other day. So the implication of this verse, even is Brahma says, even if you want to attain Brahma Sayuja in personal liberation, even in that case you need the mercy of Krishna, the mercy of Bhakti. Although less mercy is required in that case. We use the term prasad less, remember? In Sanskrit, lesha, and you make a play of words in English. Yeah. So if you need Krishna's grace, Bhakti's grace, even if you want Brahma Sayuja, what to speak if you want Krishna himself? How much grace we need? How much Bhakti is required? How much willing we should be? How much intensely we should be praying for that grace? So Brahma also invoked this idea of mercy by calling Krishna Bhagavan. That was the second name in the verse. Bhagavan means he who possesses all these different qualities, strength, beauty, knowledge. And one of them, although may not be official in the list, is compassion, mercy. So you are Bhagavan, the one who possesses all opulences. One of them is mercy, give me your mercy. Without it, I'm lost. And we concluded yesterday saying that one of the main way that Bhagavan shows his mercy on us is in the form of the association he's gifting us with. And the katha we can hear in that association. Because sometimes we may idealize what must be Krishna's mercy. And we are waiting for some extraordinary event to happen, without realizing that the extraordinary event is already happening. As Krishna Chandra Prabhu is trying to make us aware every single day. Like after breakfast 2 days ago, today we will have a very unique, special event, great celebration. And someone may be thinking, what's happening? So extraordinary. Someone's birthday or something? No, no, no. One more portal is opening in a few minutes. That's a birthday in itself. The birth of Bhakti, Krishna Bhakti Janma Mool Hoi Sadhu Sangha. We are getting out of the womb of material existence and starting to be born to real life. So it's very important that we maintain ourselves in this type of frequency. We are surrounded by extraordinary. Everything about bhakti is extraordinary. Sangha, prasad, katha, bhagavat, kirtan, all the things are supramundane, transcendental. They are not from this world. All they appear in this world to give ultimate reason to Srishti Lila, to this creation, if you will. So anyhow, that's a mercy. That's how Krishna shows his grace to us, in the form of the Sangha he's giving us. So don't ever lose sight of that. And be careful of praying to Krishna for mercy. If you are not taking proper care of the Sangha he's giving you already. You follow? Because if you are not taking care of that, Krishna will tell you, but I already gave you mercy and you are not taking care of that. Or you can pray for mercy in the form of, give me your mercy so I can take better care of the mercy you already gave me. Something like that. So anyhow, that was a brief summary of yesterday's verse. And today, in today's verse, Brahma will continue presenting and increasing his longing. Although still he won't be speaking openly about Braj, but indirectly he's pointing more and more in that direction. For those who have the ears to hear and the eyes to see. Let's try to go there. So we'll go to verse number 30 today. This verse is in Upajati Chanda as well. Although the fourth line is a little bit irregular. Remember, Brahma is going to some ecstatic irregularities. So I'll recite the verse first in Sanskrit, then we'll can recite it all together. It says like this. Tadastu me natasa bhuri bhago bhavi travanjatra tu bhaktirashtam jena hameko pibhava jananam bhutva nishede tavapada palavam. So we can recite it all together.
Tadastu me natasa bhuri bhago bhavetra bhanyatra tu vatirashtam yena ameko pivavat jananam bhutva nishebe tava pada palavam.
Static irregularity in the last syllable. So I'll recite the English translation of the verse and then we will repeat word by word. So Brahma is saying here, O Master, I therefore, in connection to the previous verse, I therefore pray to be so fortunate that in this life or in another, even among the animal species, I may be counted as one of your devotees and continuously serve your blossom-like feet. So, this is today's verse. So let's go word by word. I'll repeat the word, you can repeat after and so on. Tat.
Tat.
Therefore. Astu.
Astu.
May it be.
May it be.
May.
May.
My.
My.
Natha.
Natha.
O Master.
O Master.
Saha.
Saha.
That.
Bhuri
Bhagaha.
Bhuri Bhagaha.
Greatest good fortune.
Bhavi
Yatra.
Bhavi Yatra.
In this birth.
In this birth.
Va.
Va.
Or.
Or.
Anjatra.
Anjatra.
At another time.
Another time.
In another lifetime it means.
To. Life form also.
Yeah, yeah. To. Only.
Only.
Va.
Va.
Or.
Or.
Tirascham.
Tirascham.
Among animals.
Among animals.
Yena.
Yena.
By which.
By which.
Aham.
Aham.
I.
I.
Ekaha.
Ekaha.
One.
One.
Api.
Api.
Even.
Even.
Bhavat Jananam.
Bhavat Jananam.
Of your people.
Of your people.
Bhutva.
Bhutva.
Becoming.
Becoming.
Nisheve.
Nisheve.
I may serve.
I may serve.
Tava pada palavam.
Tava pada palavam.
Your blossom like feet.
Your blossom like feet.
So, this is a verse where Brahma is praying in this unique Sudha Bhakti like platform. So, I'll start as we have been doing these days with my Guru Maharaj's commentary on this verse. It will be included in his forthcoming book. And then we will go to other commentaries as well and share some thoughts in between. So it says like this. Brahma began his stuti, very beginning, first verse, with a very sweet description and glorification of Krishna's form, expressing his desire to attain him in Lila Seva. That is the very beginning of Brahma's stuti, verse 1. Then, gradually he spoke more philosophically about the majesty of Krishna. In the beginning was some sweetness, then Aishwarya came into the picture to further ground the sweetness. Now, in this final section of prayers, Brahma returns to Krishna's sweetness. And this in the context of expressing his own inner ambition more clearly. His budding bhava arising out of the tattva enunciated above. In this way, he shifts from the perspective of his conventional ego as Brahma, sense of identity, to a fixation of his ideal, which is his developing sense of his Braja Lila ego, like identity. He does so first in a general way, like here, no? Very humbly expressing his ambition to always take birth as a devotee, regardless of the species, thinking such a birth to be better than that of a non-devotee Brahma. He also implies that before him in Braj, there are many species, but they are all great devotees actually. Animals, birds, in Vrindavan.
Jambavan.
Sorry?
Jambavan.
Who are dedicated to Krishna's lotus-like feet. They are all Krishna's people. Bhagavad Jananam, this expression for Bhagavad Jananam. Thus, in this way, Brahma begs for Krishna's grace that is achieved by serving his devotees, and by which he too can become such a devotee. And furthermore, he expresses his desire to reside in Braj among Krishna's eternal associates. Again, this is not explicit yet, but reading between the lines starts to be hinted at. You have water? Okay. Say 2 glasses?
No, 4.
4, great. If he will say 2, I will say not 3 at least, but 4. It's okay, thank you. So, some words regarding my Guru Maharaj's words here. So, going for a minute to the very beginning of Brahma Stuti, the first verse starts to speak about sweetness. Brahma becomes charmed by the sweetness of Krishna's form. And then Brahma gives foundation to that experience by putting layer and layer of Aishwarya, or establishing how Krishna is God, the source of God, so much majesty is in him. But again, he is going back here to sweetness to conclude his prayers. So that's kind of a perfect equation, if you will. Like even for us as sadhakas, maybe in the beginning we have some sweet emotion that grabs at to Krishna. And then probably we need some philosophy to explain to ourselves what happened. To explain that emotion to ourselves, to give more philosophical ground to the emotion that we experience immediately. And if you do that properly, eventually that will take us again to the land of the emotion forever and ever. First we have to learn how Krishna is God. So someday we forget about that. We start to see Krishna in other terms. Not as God. But first we need to understand how he is the source of God. And eventually we will forget and see Krishna as one of us, the Vrajavasi. That's called Gyan Sunya Bhakti. When Ramananda Roy was interviewed by Mahaprabhu in their conversation, their sambad. That's another series altogether. But Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda, please speak to me about Sadhya Sadhana Tattva. What's the goal? What's the process to attain that goal? So as we know, Ramananda presented many possibilities, starting from Varnashram Dharma. Mahaprabhu will say, constantly, Eho Bahya Agge Kahe Ar. Now he will say, Varnashram, Mahaprabhu say, Eho Bahya, that's superficial. Agge Kahe Ar. Try to augment that truth. Try to expand on that. And in this way, Ramananda Roy will present many levels of proposals. Varnashram, then Karma Arpana, Krishna Karma Arpana, offer the fruits of one action to Krishna. Gyan Misra Bhakti, Vairagya, of renunciation, Bhakti mixed with knowledge, different things. I won't enter into details now. But Mahaprabhu will say, superficial, go deeper. Superficial, go deeper. And at one point, Ramananda Roy quotes Brahma. Quotes one verse from the Brahma Stuti. Verse 3, I think. Yeah, I think that's 3 or 3. Jnani prayasam udapasyan namanta eva. And so on. Stanestitas, and so on. Jivanti sammukaritam bhavadiya vartam. Stanestitas rutigatam tanuman manovir. Je prayasa priya. Jitajito piyasi traistilokyam. So in the first line, basically, Brahma is saying, I totally reject jnan, or this attempt of knowing you, as God even, and instead of that, namanta eva. Instead of trying to understand you with my head, I will do something better with my head. I put my head on the ground. By doing that, I will get much more knowledge about you than trying to figure out who you are with my head. Abraham has four heads, so he can know a lot. But he realized this is not the way. The way is namaste, namaskar, namante eva. Namaha means not ma, not me. It's not about me, it's about you. So this verse represents gyan sunya bhakti, which means bhakti free from knowledge. So this has two meanings. Free from knowledge means free from the knowledge that takes you to mukti. We don't want bhakti for mukti, we already spoke about that. But also on a higher level, jnana sunya bhakti means bhakti free from the knowledge, even of Krishna's godhood. I'm free of knowing Krishna as God. That's disappeared. That's the bhakti of the Brajavasis. They don't know Krishna as God. If someone will go to Vrindavan and tell the Brajavasis Krishna is God, they will feel this is Prajalpa.
There I have a question, because you said that the boys, the association of Krishna, they saw him talking with Brahma forehead. So they saw, they don't know that Krishna is God,
mm-hmm.
but they saw Brahman, he made him see. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That was Krishna Chandraprabhu say in the beginning of the lecture, in the introduction. That they were telling, stop, it's okay, no problem. Thank you for seeing us. I mean, in many occasions on a daily basis, the gopas see the devas celebrating Krishna, throwing flowers, singing his praise. But they are seeing that through the lens of Sakyabhava. So they are more like, Krishna, finish this business quickly that we need to go to the forest to play. I mean, they are devas. They know that when Indra bathed Krishna after the Govardhan Lila, he was crowned, Abhishek was there. Try to imagine this situation. No? In Vrindavan, among his friends, Indra is coming, Brahma is coming, all these like weird people, four heads, flying on swans, and all these like, no, Bhimanas or whatever. And all the gopas are like, who are these guys? No? One with four heads, other with ikes in all his body, no? Indra. And they are putting crown on Krishna and putting different like clothes and regal attire and ornaments. And Krishna is being bathed as Govinda, the Lord of Indra. So all these friends are like, all these devas offering their prayers and stutis in Aishwarya. And after the whole show is over, they leave. And all of their friends start to take all these garments from Krishna. Say, give me this one to me. And they start to try earrings and they put on each other. Take that out from you. That's weird for you. Take that crown. And they look at each other. And they tell Krishna, who are those guys? They're so weird. No. Four heads and all these things that we're saying to you. We don't understand all the things they were saying in Sanskrit or whatever. No. So they start to laugh and to joke on the devas. And the devas from heaven are looking at them and saying, the gopas are saying, who are they? And the devas are saying, who are they? Aho bhagyam, aho bhagyam. Who are those personalities? Who has such intimacy with Krishna, treated them like that. You follow? So that's how it works. Devas even may appear, but that will just increase the intimacy. That's the psychology of the Brajavasis you were studying recently in Raghavarma Chandrika. In Vrindavan, the psychology of Vrindavan is such that even if Krishna shows Aishwarya, or Samaishvara is expressed in connection to him, that only increases the Vrajavasi's madhurya or intimacy. Like when Krishna is lifting Govardhan. That's a very... I mean, till that day, everyone heard Krishna is extraordinary, he killed all these demons, but almost nobody saw that. Only some friends. But the rest were thinking, these boys are creating all these stories and exaggerating the whole thing. But when Krishna lifted Govardhan for a week, as we know, that was in front of the whole Vrindavan. So all the ones that had been hearing only rumors, now they were having first-hand experience of Krishna's Aishvarya. That's pretty Aishvaric to rise, how do you say in English? To lift a mountain, which is a big mountain, as you may know, just to circumambulate that, it takes 6 hours if you walk quickly. So it's big. And Krishna was just a few years old. And he was lifting it with the smallest finger of his less powerful hand. Such a contrast. No? For a week. So you may imagine, now Madhurya is over in Vrindavan. Because all the Brajavasis will see that and all they will become, you will become like Arjuna when he saw universal form. He started to cry and beg forgiveness to Krishna. Sorry for treating you as a friend. Sorry for sitting with you on the same bed. Excuse me. His Sakya recedes to the background. He has a different Sakya. It's called Puri Sambandhi, which is like, he's like a city friend of Krishna. It's another cosmopolitan standard, if you will. The gopas have another psychology. So Krishna's lifting Govardhan, showing such Aishvarya, but the madhurya of the Vrajavasis will increase by seeing that. How? For example, they see Krishna lifting the heel, and Yashoda will say, you must be weak at this time for lifting the heel for so long. Please eat something. And she will put something on his mouth. Or his friends will tell Krishna, you must be tired at this point. Give the heel to Sridham, who is stronger than you. And we know that because every single day he defeats you in wrestling. So we know you are weaker than Sridham. Give the heel to Sridham for a while so we can massage your arm for a while. In this way, no? Elderly gopas, as you may have seen paintings, they're with the cowherding sticks, helping Krishna, just in case it's too much for him. So that is psychology of Vrindavan. That's Gyan Sunya Bhakti. So my point was, when Ramananda Roy quotes this verse from Brahma, that's described Gyan Sunya Bhakti, remember Mahaprabhu was saying, till now, that's superficial, go deeper. That's superficial. When Ramananda says, Gyan Sunya Bhakti, Mahaprabhu says, that's nice. Please elaborate in this line. On the basis of this idea, elaborate. Why? Because Gyan Sunya Bhakti is the foundation of Braja Bhakti. And of course, the ultimate goal that Mahaprabhu is after has to do with Vrindavan.
Can I ask you something? You said earlier also the plants and the flowers and everything, they are kind of servants of Krishna also. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what kind of mood is it when you appear as a grasshopper, kind of just to hear his flute or to feel his feet on your body? So what is that kind of mood? Is it also Sakya mood? Or?
Well, of course, in our school we are not like aspiring to serve in that particular situation. No, there is a particular affinity that our sampradaya is trying to promote, which mostly has to do main current with Madhurya Bhav, specifically Manjari Bhav. And there is like a second current, like a supporting role to that, as we were speaking this day, which has to do with Sakya Bhav, and a particular type of Sakya Bhav, which is Priyanarma Sakya Bhav, which is very complementary, compatible with Manjari Bhav. So that to begin with, not just in case one was thinking, I would like to be a stone or something, bring down. I mean, we have nothing against that, of course. Whatever situation. And we will see Brahma or Uddhava, they are praying from a certain side of their humility. I may be born there in any way. But that doesn't mean that they don't want a specific situation. It's a way of expressing humility. Even a speck of dust there is higher than Brahma, me being Brahma or whatever. So, regarding the different species, if you will, in Vrindavan, of course, there are different species. So, there are different moods in those species. For example, and you have, of course, animate objects, inanimate objects. And there are difference of opinions in our acharyas as well in that connection, to make things more complicated. For example, some acharyas will say, like, the clouds in Vrindavan are in Sakya Rasa. So there are verses in Shastra with the gopis are also praying like that in some of the Gitas, Gopi Gitas. So again, a cloud is apparently an inanimate object, but it has that particular mood of trying to assist Krishna as a friend and cover from the sun and relieve him with the soft drops and so on. Anyhow, the cows are said to be in Vatsalya, mostly. So in this way, there are different types of, for example, regarding the earth. Sometimes Ayacharya said, which is in Santa Rasa, but also we have this idea that there is no Santa Rasa in Vrindavan. And that's why Mahaprabhu came to, what it is described, what he came to give, sometimes Krishnadas Kaviraj will say Charibhav, which is Dasya Sakya Vatsalya Madhurya. Santa is not included in the equation. Because Santa has to do more with passive contemplation, mostly directed to Paramatma or Vishnu and Vaikuntha, more Vaikuntha-like attainment. So sometimes it's described, for example, that the earth in Vrindavan experience conjugal pleasure but entering in touch with Krishna's foot souls, for example. But again, there are different opinions among our acharyas. Some will say some things and other. But the point is that, anything and everything there is experienced in some particular relationship with Krishna. Even Krishna's ornaments. Try to understand this idea. Srila Sri Maharaj will make this point always. Everything there is a person. You don't need to have them in human form. Every atom there has individuality and a particular loving relationship with Krishna. Even Krishna's earrings, garland, flower petals, clothes. All of them are part of his swarup, of his eternal identity. That's why Krishna never changes his cloth, in one sense. He always wears pitambara, because that's part of his own identity, of his swarup.
So also the flute.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. And for example, I mean, maybe I'm sidetracking a little bit, but anyhow, it's connected. For example, one may say, okay, if Krishna's clothes are part of his swarup, of his very identity, they're inseparable. Of course, he has different identities. So when he goes to Mathura, for example, that's another Krishna. When Krishna goes out, quote-unquote, of Vrindavan, we are told by our acharyas, an expansion of Krishna is the one going out. Akura saw that. So being in Mathura, another mood is there. So we know when he's entering Mathura, he meets the washerman who was taking some clothes of Kamsa with him. And Krishna, with his friends, they were entering Mathura, and they want to try to take those clothes for them. And this washerman is not willing to give it. And starts to insult Krishna and his friend. Who do you think you are to wear the clothes of the king? You are ordinary boys. Because they were still dressing as cowherds in the great city, Mathura. Try to imagine coming from the uncivilized tribe to the city. Going from the mountains to Zurich. Dressed like this. And people will look, not like this exactly, but in the city people will look at. So anyhow, Krishna and his friends, Krishna, the point is this, because Jiva Goswami says this in Priti Sandarbha, if all the clothes that Krishna wears are part of his swarup, why he wore the clothes of Kamsa in Mathura, these clothes that he took and wore? You follow my point? You can say that's the clothes of someone else, that's not part of his own but not. Krishna went out of Braj, so now he's in Mathura, and there has to be a there's a corresponding Swarup of or there's corresponding Krishna in Mathura with a corresponding cloth. And Krishna recognized the cloths that belong to his Swarup were the ones taken by the washerman. Kamsa didn't wear them. They were destined for Kamsa. But Krishna recognized, oh, those are the clothes that belong to my Swarup in Mathura, that belong to my identity as a great personality here. So he just claimed them back. And he just put the cloth. They were part of his own Swarup, basically. So anyhow, some ideas for to think how these ornaments and things are part of the very identity of Bhagavan. Everything is a devotee. Sorry.
Just Gurudev once said, and then Krishna appeared because Kamsa knew this cloth. They were like for him. Now this little boy, which already has so much fear, and he sees him, and you said, entering as death personified, having his own, his cloth. So Kamsa was really afraid.
Oh, yeah. That was extra udipana, vipa.
Exactly.
Okay. So let's return to what I was saying half an hour ago or something. Lost and found in Harikatha. So gradually, then Brahma's sense of identity is gradually shifting in these prayers. From being Brahma, he will shift to seeing himself as a Brajavasi eventually, and more specifically as a Gopa. Gradually he will reach there. But before that, he has to establish the foundation of Sudha Bhakti or pure Bhakti that he does in this verse. When he says, I prefer to be a devotee born as an insect than to be a non-devotee as Brahma. Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed similarly in one of his songs. I prefer to be born as an insect in the house of a devotee than to be Brahma without bhakti. So now Brahma is saying the same thing. Mahaprabhu himself saying, Adhanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Ba. And so on. I don't care for dharma, artha, kama, even moksha. I don't care for transcendence of samsara. I only care for bhakti. No matter where it takes me, which form it takes me, no? If there is bhakti, let me be an ant. Let me be an animal. I don't care. Because bhakti, and that also speaks indirectly about the power of bhakti. How you can be an ant and still be in connection with bhakti. You cannot be an animal and be in connection with jnana or yoga. You need human form for that. But bhakti is not limited to human form, interestingly. Of course, human form is the special platform for embracing bhakti, but there are many testimonies in Shastra. Bhakti is present in every time, place, circumstance, species. It's not limited by anything, and that shows bhakti is the most powerful thing. It doesn't care for formalities. So Brahma will pray here on this foundation of Pseudha Bhakti, and gradually his prayers, as we'll see, will become more and more specific. He, Brahma, is praying to be counted among Krishna's devotees. That's also sometimes called as tadiya, those things that belong to Krishna, those who are Krishna's own, own people, his own. Aradhananam sarvisham vishnoranaranam aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi yanam samartanam. Mahadev Shiva said one to Parvati, of all the types of worship, the worship of Vishnu is the highest. So Parvati was kind of discouraged. Because she said, oh, but Prabhu, he said to Shiva, you are my worshipable object. And you are telling me that there's someone else higher worship than you. So Mahadev said, no, the verse is not over yet. Tasmat parataram devi, but devi superior to the worship of Vishnu, tadiyanam samarchana, is the worship of those dear to Vishnu. So Parvati say, okay, you are Vaishnavanam Jata Sambhu. You are so dear to Vishnu, so I'm in the right place. So this is a very important principle, serving those things who are dear to Krishna. Yashoda showed this also before the Damodar Lila. Well, taking attention to, pay attention to the boiling milk, I'm putting Krishna on one side to take care of the milk. It may sound, why? You have Krishna on your lap. Let the milk boil. But she knew, no, this milk is to be, is tadiya, is something to be offered in the service of Krishna. So you have to take care of this paraphernalia in his service. Indeed, Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta once said, everything in this world is potential paraphernalia to be offered in the service of Krishna. He referred to the Arctic plate, which has incense, lamp, water. So there are all the five bhutas, the five main elements are represented there. Air, water, fire, ether, air. In the lamp, in the water, in the sound, conch shell, air, in the fan. So what do we do with the five elements? The whole world is made of five elements. So this plate symbolizes the whole world. So what do you do with the whole world in a plate? You offer to Bhagavan first. And then you receive the remnants of what was offered. So he will say, this whole world, Prabhupada Sanda, is like a big Arctic plate. So all of this is potential paraphernalia to be offered in the service of Bhagavan. It's clear? Sorry? So anyhow, that's the principle of serving those things that are destined to be serving Krishna. Everything, including us. And also Brahma here indirectly is pointing to Braj. For example, by say Bhavak Jananam, he's speaking to Krishna in Vrindavan in this verse. And he's saying, let me be servant of your people, those who are yours. And that points to the Brajavasis. In Vrindavan, you find Krishna's own people. Nowhere else apart from Braj, someone will think, Krishna is one of us. But the Brajavasis think like this. Again, they don't think Krishna is God. They think Krishna is a Brajavasi. Of course, a very special one. But they will feel he's one of us. And more interestingly, Krishna himself will think, I'm a Brajavasi. I'm one of them. Krishna is not in Vrindavan thinking, actually I'm God, but I have to play the show of being a Brajavasi here. He is not thinking like that. So in this way he's pointing to Vrindavan. So since everyone in Vrindavan is Krishna's own people, even the earth, the grass, everyone is glorious there. For example, I remember in the Vrindavan Mahimamrita of Sri Prabodhananda Saraswati Pad, there are hundreds of verses, literally, that he spends glorifying the trees of Vrindavan. And you may think, why so many verses for trees? So that's the answer. Why not? Prabhupada Saraswati will say, why not? Any tree, even any tree, should be worthy of praise. What to speak of the trees in Vrindavan? Every tree should remind us, Tarori Vasa Hishnuna. Every tree is a guru, teaching us tolerance. Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, pure compassion free from envy. When Mahaprabhu says, Tarori Ivasa Hishnuna, he means the tree is not only tolerating each tree, you have many trees here you can look at, so you have no excuse in the mountains to not follow this verse of Mahaprabhu. Lots of grass, lots of trees. And every tree is tolerating heat, cold, rain, snow, especially here. But actually, instead of tolerating, the tree is giving. Giving shadow, giving fruit, giving shade, giving air, giving shelter, giving. It's not tolerating, it's giving. Tolerating is a secondary thing. Mostly it's giving. Even if you go with an axe to cut the tree will give shade to the person who is cutting it.
And after food.
Yeah. There's this one Persian saying that says, be like the sandalwood tree who is perfuming the axe that is cutting it. It's poetry, but when we try to practice that, it doesn't feel so poetic. We should do it. Imagine, no? Someone comes with the axe and you reciprocate perfuming. That's why Mahaprabhu said, Tarora Pisagishana. That's the standard of tolerance he wants to see in his devotees. Which is not so much, again, tolerating, but giving. Giving to the point that you forget that you have to tolerate.
Like Haridas Thakur was saying, okay, you need me to die?
Okay. Yeah. If you will be chastised by me remaining alive, then better I die, so you don't suffer. That was his standard. Okay, of course we cannot imitate. We may go dysfunctional. But we have to appreciate those examples and become inspired to become more. So anyhow,
she has something.
Who? Yes. Oh, I thought you were just like some mudra or something. Okay.
I was wondering when you were telling about the tree mood now.
The what, sorry?
The mood of the tree.
Ah.
It was giving and giving and giving. Because earlier there was this question of the blade of grass, what mood it is in. I was wondering if we could say that the trees are in Gopi Bar, because I heard that Gopi's specialty is that they want to give Krishna their whole body. And when you were telling now and giving all these examples, it is as if the tree has... I mean, of course, it is. You were telling about a material tree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know now if I'm wrong, but I was somehow thinking about it.
Mm.
That this tree is in Gopi Bath because he wants to give... he wants to serve Krishna with everything of his body. And like the gopis also see in Govardhan, when they praise Govardhan, they see how Govardhan serves with every single aspect of his body. So they can see this in Govardhan because they themselves have this mood. And this is why I was wondering if maybe the truth... Sometimes it's said that it's Vatsalya Bhav, but maybe it's Gopi
Bhav. Yeah, actually the idea of... of the trees giving their bodies for the service of Krishna, not doesn't necessarily indicate Gopi Bhav, because technically speaking, everyone in Vrindavan is giving their bodies for the service of Krishna. In one way, the way the gopis are giving their bodies for Krishna's direct enjoyment, if you will, that's a unique feature of Madhurya Bhav, but it doesn't mean that in another sense, everyone is not doing that. Everyone is in Vatsalya, Sakya, Dasya, giving from tip to toe their whole being, and it doesn't mean that because of that they are in Madhurya Bhav. That on one side. And on another side, I will say that, as you mentioned, the verse Hantai, Nadrira, Balahari, Dasabari, and so other, so many others, if you go to the Venu Gita especially, you will see that the gopis are basically saying that everyone is in Gopi Bhav. But it doesn't mean that everyone is in Gopi Bhav. They are just projecting their own hearts into everything. No, it's that, like if you have a lens that the glasses are red, you say, oh, everything, you turn red, all of you. What happened to you? You say, no, Maharaj, we are not red. Yes, yes, you are red. No, because you have those lens. So, of course, in this world, that's conditioning, but in the higher world, that happens. No? So not necessarily the trees are in Madhurya Bhav, but the gopis may see them in that particular light according to their own inspiration or bhava. Now, when they are looking for Krishna in Rasa Lila, and they start to inquire from the vines, and they start to project their own bhava into some of the inanimate species on the path, and start to inquire from them, and so on. Anyhow. So Brahma is trying, again, he's going from something more general.
What? Change of translation.
Oh, I see. Change of translation. So, Brahma is becoming from something more general, he's going to something more specific. Mm-hmm. And that's what Raganuga Bhakti is about. Raganuga Bhakti, we can call it the path of specificity. You can call it like that if you will. The more we advanced, the more nuanced and specific becomes our goal, more detailed. In the beginning, everything is more generic, more abstract, if you will. God, heaven, then Vrindavan, Krishna, Vrindavan, but gradually becomes more specific. Exactly. But interestingly, you become more specific in your goal, but also you become more broad-minded. And you can harmonize and accommodate other moods and things, like we were sharing these days with Gopa Kumar and so on. He had one goal, but also he was appreciative of other things. It's not that I have one goal and I become fanatical and sectarian or something. Mm-hmm. So you have your goal, and actually because you have your goal in a proper way, you appreciate other goals. So gradually our process should become more and more specific. For example, and again, going back to Mahaprabhu's conversation with Ramananda Roy, in one sense he's asking, what's the goal of life? Ramananda Roy will say prem. And for many of us, it's, yes, that's the answer. Prem is the goal of life. Mahaprabhu say, yes, but no. That's still general. Follow. If I tell you, what's the goal of life? You say, prem. But the question immediately is, which type of prem? You have prem for Vishnu, for Ram, for Krishna. There are varieties of prem. It's not yet specific. And prem is specific. It's not like abstract. So you can say, okay, Krishna prem. So the next question will be, okay, what type of Krishna prem? But let's go gradually there. Krishna prem. Which type of Krishna? Which type of Krishna? Which Krishna? Braja Krishna, Mathura Krishna, Dwarka Krishna. You may say Braja Krishna. Okay, which type of prem for Braja Krishna? Oh, Madhurya, Vatsalya, Sakya, whatever. Someone may say, okay, Madhurya prem for Braja Krishna. I got it. Not yet. Which type of Madhurya prem? There are different varieties of that. Bhavichatmika, Sambhogichamai, in which you look for direct union with Krishna, or you try to serve the Naika or the heroine. Someone may say, okay, Tat Bhavichatmika, sometimes called Bhavolasrati or Manjari Bhav, and so on. Okay, I got it. Still, some few details are missing yet. Under the guidance of which Yudhishthira, group leader, and which will be your Manjari leader. And so on. So my point with this is, from the idea of prem, you can see how much specificity has to be in place for you to actually, okay, I have a clear picture of where I want to enter. You have to have that clear picture even in theory, so you conduct yourself in sadhana with some focus in mind. Maybe you won't know all these details in day one, but gradually you have to have a clear idea of sadhya, so you can engage in sadhana with that sadhya in your mind. That's why Mahaprabhu asked to Ramananda, sadhya sadhana tattva. He didn't say sadhana sadhya tattva. First establish the goal, and then establish the practice towards that goal. Because, you follow my point? If your goal is Braj, the sadhana will be specific, Raganuga Bhakti. If your goal is Vaikuntha, the sadhana will be different. So, like the GPS, first you have to put where I going to go, and then the path counts. Yes.
How can I understand that if you say, if this is my goal, can it be my goal if this is not in my svarup, I never get there?
I didn't understand the question again.
You did say, if this is my goal, like Braj, to serve there in a certain way, how can it be my goal if this is not in my eternal svarup? Then I don't get there. Do I miss here something?
Let's see if I understood the question. Maybe this is a long topic, and maybe it's connected again to a topic that I have written a whole book about recently. So I don't want to sound like I'm promoting my book, just I'm saying that that's a long topic. For example, the idea, do we have an intrinsic swarup or not? In some particular affinity which is already there or not? Or we receive that according to the Sangha we have. So when we go to what Shastra is saying about that, and that's what I try to compile in my book, is that this particular affinity is received in sadhus, by sadhu Sangha. It's not in the intrinsic constitution of the soul. So we will be inclined to a particular goal depending on which is the bhakti samskars or devotional impressions we receive in sadhu Sangha. So in one sense we could say, if I enjoy Gaudiya Sampradaya and take shelter in one particular guru, most probably my goal will be the goal that my guru has. That will be the general rule. Now there may be some exceptions to the rule because you may have practiced in your previous lifetime. And you acquire some scars in one direction, but for some whatever reason you, in this second lifetime, you get some other association. Like famous example of Shyamananda Pandit, for example. His guru was Hriday Chaitanya. He was in Sakya Bhav. And Shyamananda Pandit developed affinity towards Madhurya Bhav. So generally that's not happening, but there are some cases, and we could think in some cases in terms of previous samskars. Like the example of Anupam, the brother of Rupa and Sanatan. Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, I mean, they have Madhurya Bhav, I can tell you. But their brother, Anupam, once the three of them make a vow, brother's vow, let's worship Radha Krishna forever. Okay. But that night, Anupam was not able, this is the father of Jiva Goswami, also called Balava. He couldn't sleep that night because he had so much love for Ramachandra. And he was in a very advanced stage of Ram Bhakti. So next day, he presented the situation to Rupa and Sanatana and said, let's go to Mahaprabhu, let's present the case to him. And he said, he made this vow, but he cannot follow the vow because his heart is sold to Sitaram. And Mahaprabhu, what did Mahaprabhu say? He said, glorious is that devotee who cannot leave his Lord. And glorious is that Lord who cannot leave his devotee. So again, these are more exceptions to the rule. So,
but maybe one can also understand the question on a different level. That some persons just come and now I am come to bhakti, and before the sadhana starts, I have to define the sadhya, and it's just like a mental stuff.
Yeah. That's why I say you won't be having all these details on day one. Now I'm telling that to you because I assume all of you, this is not day one of you here. But yeah, if someone is coming for the very first day in their life to Ananda Dham, probably you don't need to sit them and figure out all those details to the person before you just chant Hare Krishna for the first time. That's not the idea. But gradually, at certain point, relatively, in the beginning you will start to have immediately some orientation. For example, relatively quickly you will know, okay, this is pointing to Vrindavan. Here we are not generally pointing to Vaikuntha or Ayodhya, or with all respect to those goals. So you start to have a general idea, okay, this path goes to Vrindavan, it's about Braja Bhakti. The more you get familiar with that, you see, okay, there is some particular main currents inside Vraja Bhakti. So in time you start, you have to get more specific. How long that will take, I don't know. I cannot tell you. But my point is, you cannot reach the ultimate goal, at least as a general rule, without getting in theory to that specific details that you would like to go. Again, that may happen in years. I'm not saying it has to be maximum 3 months. I'm not saying anything like that. Every situation is specific. But my point is, if you have a very abstract idea, just, I want to go to Vrindavan.
Or to God.
Or to God. Back to Godhead or something, and you feel maybe I'm chanting 16 rounds and following 4 regulative principles. So at the end of my life, Krishna will take me there. But you don't have a clue about the details of, you don't even have a particular affinity yet. So where will Krishna take you? He's not such cruel person that he will take you to some place that you don't want. You have not chosen. He wants your individuality also to take place. I want that. No? And that may take time. Again, I'm not saying, but my point is, don't think you will get there without figuring these details at some point. Although, of course, if Krishna wants, he can give Kripa Siddhi to someone like me and you go there, but that's kind of a very exceptional case, not like Bhutan or something, some lottery winning or something. But you shouldn't live your life like if you will win the lottery, because generally it won't happen. No? You should do your sadhana, and part of your sadhana gradually figuring out these details. Because we are practicing Raga Nuka Bhakti, that's the school we belong to. Brahma is hinting at that here by saying, I want to serve those who are your own people. Mm. That is the gist of Raga Bhakti. Tadbhava lipshuna karya braja loka nusharataha. To follow in the wake of the moods of the Vrajavasis. So for that you need to know, okay, who are the Vrajavasis? And which are the moods, different moods of the Vrajavasis? And eventually, which is the one that I want to follow? Which attraction do I have? And how much that attraction is real attraction? Because also you can think, oh, I heard that class and I think I want to be a manjari. But it's not like that. I think I want to be. No? You have to put your attraction to test. No? Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, once he was asked, how do we know if we have laulyam, that we spoke the other day, lobha, this currency?
Sacred greed.
Sacred greed. And he said, well, one way of tasting that is how much of the other greed you still have. The non-sacred greed. Because if you really have sacred greed, there's no place for any other greed. But still you have all this other greed, and at the same time you think you are this or that, that's probably imagination or something.
That's like on the edge also, some are more like psychotic kind of, you're thinking
of course, or the idea is to be balanced and always traverse the middle path, if you will.
Exactly.
But anyhow, here Brahma is subtly pointing to that, to Raga Nuka Bhakti, which is residing in the company ultimately of Ragatmikas and intensely serving in their association forever. So we are 1 hour and 8 minutes, 108, auspicious, but we have not yet begun to study any of the commentaries yet. Almost, only of the one of my Guru Maharaj.
Yeah.
Still we have time?
Yeah.
Still eternity is on our side?
Yeah.
Okay. We are eternals, Bhagavat is eternal, Bhakti is eternal, so.
Yeah.
It's like Ananda Dham is eternal. Let's go to Sridhar Swami's Bhavartha Deepika. So he says like this. He says the term Bhuri Bhago, this one, which is ecstatic, the term is, I don't know, it took some particular form, the words here, which means greatest good fortune. So the words are kind of exploding in the whiteboard here. Bhuri Bhago. So that refers to Brahma. Praying to receive this greatest fortune in this or in any birth, as he will say, to become one amongst those who belong to Krishna. And in the company of those who belong to Krishna, ni-seve, to intensely serve, ni-seve. Seva means service, ni-seve means like continuously serving, intense serving, Nityam Bhagavata Sivaya, Haitukiya Pratiyata, and so on. Mm-hmm. Both a sadhaka, where he is now, as well as a siddha. No? No? That's the only way you will become a siddha. If you are sadhaka, start to enter into that frequency. No? The closer you get to the siddha standard, the more you will become a siddha. It's not that I'm like a lazy sadhaka, but Krishna is merciful and at the end of my life makes me a siddha. It doesn't work like that. So again, this word niseve indirectly points to Braj. No? Eagerly serving, intensely serving, 24 hours, 7 days a week. You only find that standard of service in the Ashtakaliya Lila Vrindavan. The intense absorption, as you were studying, as you told me with the Sankalpa Kalpadruma recently. So he's saying Bhuri Bhago. Bhago means like portion. We hear this word many times. Ramanda Brahmiti Kona Bhagyavan Jiva. Aho Bhagyam, Aho Bhagyam. Rupa Goswami used the term Ati Bhagyena. How bhakti comes to our lives. Extreme good fortune. So not this is not only referring to how bhakti comes to our life, but to the type of bhakti that we are after as Gaudiyas. That's the greatest good fortune possible. So that's what Sridhar Swami says. Try to be brief with the commentaries because already expanded. And I'm sure at one point lunch has to be cooked and all these type of things as well. Which is part of the celebration and the portal as well. So it's non-different. It's just a different perspective. Let's go to Sanatan Goswami's Brihad Vaishnav Toshini. He says some interesting things. He connects the previous verse to this verse. So in the previous verse, remember, Brahma was saying, only by your mercy we can know you. So Sanatana Goswami says, paraphrasing Brahma, your mercy results in becoming your servant. Because to know you means to know who is my relationship with you. I'm your servant. So Brahma here prays to become a servant. In one sense, Brahma here is praying for Dasya. Not because he wants Dasya, we already know what he wants. But in a general way, every relationship with Krishna is based on Dasya. No? Radha Dasyam. Sakya is a form of Dasyam. Everything is a form of serving, but it takes different forms. But it's Dasya as a foundation, if you will. So he begins with this Dasya. We will see eventually in the next verses he will elaborate more. And he calls Krishna Nata. So this word, according to Sanatan Goswami, indicates that Nata means can mean, according to Sanatan Goswami, oh, you who fulfill all desires. Again, he has a very specific desire. He's not yet showing that. But he's starting to address he who fulfills of all desires. And then he will present the desire. He invokes, you fulfill all desires? Okay, here is my desire. It begins with the foundation of Dasya, but it will be more specific. Brahma also further implies here that the good fortune that made me Brahma, or Parameshti, that's another name for Brahma. I mean, to be Brahma, you have to have some good fortune, some punya, acquired credit, if you want to call that good fortune. But Brahma is saying, that good fortune that make me to be Brahma is not good fortune at all in comparison to what I'm seeing now. And Krishna, what does Krishna say in the Gita? 8th chapter, verse 16. Abrahma bhuvanaloka punaravartinarjana mamupetyatu kauntya punarjanmana vidyate. So Krishna says, from the planet of Brahma, which means from the position of Brahma, even to the lowest situation in this world, all are temporary places of birth and death. But the one who attains me doesn't return here, Krishna says. So up to Brahma, that's miserable, Krishna saying. Now Brahma is saying the same thing. I'm Brahma, he's saying. I know it's not good fortune, it's not the great thing to be here. My greatest fortune, again, Bhuri Bhaga, will be to take birth among your devotees. And Sanatana Goswami says that Brahma is here making like a play of words. The word bhaga also can mean inheritance. So Brahma is implying with this, this will be the best inheritance for me, who I'm your eldest son. Now remember, Brahma is the eldest son of Krishna, in the sense he was born from the lotus that came from the navel of one aspect of Krishna. So in one sense, Brahma is the first created being, this Krishna's son. If I'm your son, daddy, give me some inheritance. The best inheritance will be to be born among your devotees. In any form, but we'll see here in Braj at least. So when Brahma is mentioning, I'm willing to even be born as an animal, he makes that point here. Sanatana Goswami says that Brahma is clarifying, actually it's not that I'm interested in being born as an animal per se, it's not that I want to be an animal, but the point is, I'm ready to do anything to obtain bhakti for you, even if that entails being born as an animal. I don't care if bhakti is there. Again, lauliam. If you have lauliam, okay, I don't care. Give me the form that will facilitate what I need to obtain.
It's interesting because Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Neha vikramanajasti pratavaya. So a little bhakti protects you from the greatest danger, which means to lose the human form of life. But now the perspective is very much different. I'm even ready to offer that because bhakti is much, much more valuable.
Exactly. In essence, it's the same principle. It speaks about the glory and power of bhakti, but it takes different forms according to the trajectory in one's journey. So Brahma here is ready for whatever form it facilitates bhakti. With this idea in mind that we mentioned before, bhakti can even reach animals. Bhagavatam show an example, Gajendra. You have Jatayu in Ram Lila, and many others. So that's the reach and generosity of bhakti, the power of bhakti. So Brahma has fully realized how powerful bhakti can be. So he knows, even if I'm born as an animal, bhakti can reach me there. And Sanatana Goswami concludes with an interesting idea. He said, another alternative meaning of the verse. He always likes to give alternative meanings. He says, in this verse, Brahma is saying, your mercy is achieved only by serving those in your entourage, retinue. And your mercy should produce service to those devotees. And therefore he begs, he's begging in this verse, let me born as one among your new devotees, so I can serve the lotus feet of your associates. So that's hinting again at Raganuga Bhakti. Let me born as a new devotee of yours so I can serve your associates. I'm sure when you studied recently Raghavarma Chandrika, sorry to continue testing you how much you studied Raghavarma Chandrika. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, at the very end of the last part of the book, he mentions, in order to attain Golok, first you have to be born in the Prakat Lila to further churn the Prem you have attained. Even if you attain Prem, that's not all, as we spoke before. Prem is not the goal of life in itself. You have developments in Prem. Sneha, Mam, Pranaya, Rag, Anurag, depending the relationship, Bhav, Mahabhav, and developments inside Mahabhava. And for that you need to be born in the womb of a gopi in Nitya Lila, in the Prakat Lila, surrounded by eternal associates, and receive bhakti samskars from the womb, right in the Prakat Lila. So somehow Brahma is hinting at that, according to what Sanatana Goswami is saying here. I want to be born among your new devotees as a new Vrajavasi on earth, so I can serve your associates, your Nitya Parishads who appear with you on earth. That's a way to attain my ultimate goal in Vrindavan. He started to have these glimpses, all that Raga Bhakti entails. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami's Lagu Vaishnav Toshni. He's paraphrasing Brahma. So Brahma is saying through Srila Jiva Goswami. That's the Brahma we want to hear. The one who speaks through the Goswamis. I have received mercy. Remember, last verse. Only through mercy I can know you. So Brahma says, I received mercy. By which I have received knowledge of your powers. Brahma became aware of the Aishvarya of Krishna. You are the source of Narayan. And things like this. By which I have begun my sadhana, or have gone deep into my sadhana, by becoming aware of who you actually are. And the result of all that is seeing now face to face. Brahma is concluding in Sakshat Darshan. You are showing yourself to me in this unique form now. And Brahma says, this happened so quickly. And Brahma is surprised. Like, again, for some perspective, one can say it didn't happen so quickly. It was a few years of his life. But still he's making the point, what I'm seeing now is so valuable that it was very quick all that, how it happened. Bhakti is so merciful. It's not so much in comparison to what I am obtaining, what I have to go through, it's not too much. So we should always remember, I don't have to pay that much for such a valuable gift. I mean, I have to give my full self, but that still is not too much compared to the wealth that is coming from the other place. Jiva Goswami says, then, from here, from this verse, to the following verses, Brahma will connect the first verse of the whole stuti, in which he's saying, Nomi, offering pranam to Krishna and glorifying his form. This verse and the following ones will be an elaboration of that. And all of these praises culminate in the form that Brahma is seeing here in Vrindavan. Which, remember, is the form that Brahma somehow offended and thought, this is an imposter. So now to counteract his offense, he's praising that form in one sense and appreciating all that is in that form. So Jiva Goswami says, that here Brahma is implying, I am not eager to be born elsewhere in an animal body, but I desire to be born as a devotee of some sort in Braj. So again, Brahma is not saying that, but Jiva Goswami is reading between the lines, catching the intention of Brahma. So Brahma says, I'm not eager to be an animal anywhere, but in Vrindavan, give me whatever form, something like making this emphasis, I want to take birth there. I want to be some type of devotee in Vrindavan. Any position in Vrindavan is glorious. He's making this point. And then he will specify what he wants. But first he's establishing any position in the Braj is super transcendental. And Jiva Goswami concludes, connecting the previous verse again with this. He said, we can take the previous verse and this one together. I say, although some are fortunate to understand your glories by a particle of mercy, that was the last verse, Prasad Lesh, by some particle of mercy some people is fortunate to know you, but what will happen if full mercy were shown? That's this verse. No? Just by a particle of your mercy someone can know you in a certain way. But what if instead of a particle of mercy you give full mercy? What will happen? Then, if that will happen, Brahma says, I could be some devotee among your associates in Braj. So, and of course, Brahma is implying, that's the mercy I want. That's what I want. Let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. It's very interesting. And he gives kind of a summary of the whole verse. And he also, as he does in many of his commentaries, he will present some words of Krishna in between verses. So Brahma says the previous verse, and Krishna will say something, and this verse will be a reply of Brahma to what Krishna said in between.
It's like a dialogue that is coming in.
Yeah. He does so in many parts of, especially 10th canto. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, at this point Krishna may say, "O Brahma, crest jewel of all knowers of sadhana and sadhya." Now, because Krishna is in Muktata, Krishna is in his modus brajavasi, and here Brahma is praising him. And Krishna is saying, "Why are you praising me? You are Brahma. I am just an ordinary boy looking for my friends and calves." So Krishna is speaking to Brahma, "You are the crest jewel knower of all sadhya and sadhana. What is your desire after describing jnan and bhakti in your prayers?" No? Brahma has done that for many verses. So you have described all the things, but what is your desire? What do you want? Consider this carefully, Krishna is saying, and then pray for the most valuable thing. And Brahma replies in this verse, Dasya. Again, it's not he wants Dasya, but he's laying the foundation, preparing the ground for his request. Indicating himself as a servant, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues, Brahma replies to Krishna in this verse, "O Master, yes, I have discerned the most auspicious thing of all, Bhuri Bhaga." And what is that? Whether I get a birth as Brahma, I may have to be born as Brahma again, what to do, he's thinking. Or whether I get a low birth as a deer for many births, as an animal, with no chance for liberation, because I may lose the opportunity to attain bhakti, I pray to take birth as one of your devotees. That's another perspective which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said. Either advanced or neophyte. Whether advanced or neophyte. Brahma is kind of being invaded by extreme humility. So
it would be even an elevation to be even to a very beginner in Vraj.
Yeah. So
yeah, an upgrade.
Again. So again, in one sense you have this level of dasya that he's requesting as a foundation of all other rasas, if you will. Because all other rasas are forms of dasya. And that's why we emphasize also the dasya in Gaur Lila, which is dasya, and that gives opens the door to other relationships in the Braj. Dasya towards Sri Guru, towards the Vaishnava. That's our beginning relationship. Now, if we don't know what to do with our dasya with Guru and Vaishnavs, we cannot think too much about Madhurya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and so on. So Brahma is praising, even as a neophyte, I want to be born. As a kanista, if you will. I'm saying this way because sometimes we may think kanista dikari, that's like kanista dikari. And of course, kanista dikari is not the goal of life. But it implies adhikar for bhakti. So in that sense, it's glorious. It's glorious to be a kanista dikari. It's not glorious to remain a kanista dikari. There's one story that comes to my mind. Srila Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, once he sent his disciples to hear from Srila Bhakti Rakshasiddhar Dev Goswami Maharaj. Because for Srila Puri Maharaj, Srila Siddhar Maharaj was his Siksha Guru. Especially after this famous incident, when Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was leaving his body, you know it? Okay, I'll tell it briefly. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was on his deathbed, if you will, and he requested to Srila Siddhar Maharaj, "Please sing for me Sri Rupa Manjari Pada," which is the anthem of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, if you will. Narottam Das Thakur glorifying how the feet of Sri Rupa Manjari are our everything. So he asked Srila Siddhar Maharaj to do so. which was not just sing a song for me, but in a more deep way was he's giving Srila Siamara's entrance into the intimate service of Rupa Manjari. So Srila Siamara started to sing. But he was not, let's say, famous for being a Gandharva, for being a very melodious singer and all. But he was Srila Siddhar Maharaj. And that's what Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta wanted to hear. But some devotee thought, let's make someone else to sing, someone who sings more melodiously, better. So they asked Srila Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, who also was, of course, a great devotee, but he was famous for being a great singer. So he started to sing. And Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta stopped Srila Puri Maharaj. I said, I don't want to hear a nice voice. I want to hear Srila Siddhar Maharaj. And then Srila Siddhar Maharaj continued singing. So, in one sense, this pastime shows the greatness of Srila Siddhar Maharaj. But in another sense, the story shows the greatness of Srila Puri Maharaj. Why? Because try to imagine yourself in that situation. Let's say, no? Your guru is leaving the body. Of course, we don't like to think in those things, but my point is, and someone else starts to sing, and someone else tells you, you sing for Gurudev in his last moment. And you start to sing, and your guru say, stop singing. And I want to hear him. Probably we will become envious and we will hate the other person that is singing. I wanted to sing. Why you're? I mean, hopefully that's not happening. But my point is, but Srila Puri Maharaj, when he was told stop singing, and Srila Siddhar Maharaj has to sing. From that moment, Srila Puri Maharaj said, Srila Siddhar Maharaj is my immediate Siksha Guru and the immediate representative of my Guru Maharaj from now on, forever. Wow. He took that as a sign. He surrendered to Srila Siddhar Maharaj in that precise moment. So that speaks about who Srila Puri Maharaj is. Still, I have not begun the story about Srila Puri Maharaj. So my point is, Srila Puri Maharaj was sending his disciples to hear from Srila Siddhar Maharaj. But he was very old to go himself. He's almost 100 years old. He lived for 102 years old. So the disciples went to hear from Srila Siddhar Maharaj. And Srila Siddhar Maharaj was speaking about Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttam Adhikari. And which are the typical activities that these devotees engage in? So the Kanishta is described in Shastra as worshipping the deity mostly, but not being very able to relate with the Vaishnavas. Thinking more in terms of Krishna and me, not seeing the principle of the associates. And then Madhyam is someone who has more discrimination and know how to relate with everyone. And Uttam is someone who is totally immersed in divine love and totally empowered to even change some things and adjust according to Bhava. And when he was saying this, he mentioned examples for these three among his god brothers. But wait. But he was, Srila Siddhar Maharaj was not saying my god brothers are Kanishta, Madhyam, or Uttam. He was saying the activities that characterize these three types sometimes were more prominent in the life of these good brothers of mine. I will give you the example and hopefully you understand. He said, Kanishta Adhikari, Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. Why? Because Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj was the main pujari and installer of deities in the whole Gaudiya Math. He was expert in this realm and many other things. But he was well known by his expertise regarding to Archana. Yeah, but that doesn't... Srila Siddhar Maharaj was not saying he's a Kanishta Adhikari. He's saying Archana is what characterizes a Kanishta. And Srila Puri Maharaj is mainly engaged, not mainly, but he's well known for this activity which characterizes a Kanishta. But he didn't clarify this. He just said Kanishta Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. So if you know Srila Siddhar Maharaj, you may understand what he meant. But these disciples of Puri Maharaj who were hearing that, they didn't understand that. So try to imagine. They went to hear, their guru told them, go to hear from Srila Siddhar Maharaj. They go, and they hear from Srila Siddhar Maharaj that he's calling their guru a Kanishta. They were totally confused. And then he said, Madhyam Bhakta Bhakti Daita Madhav Maharaj, Uttam Bhakta Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj. But again, he was not referring to their inner adhikar, but the activities they were doing. But Madhav Maharaj was very like orthodox preacher and doing things in a particular way, and Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj was transplanting the whole thing in an empowered way and doing so many things that only an Uttam can do. But the point is that the disciples of Puri Maharaj were confused. So they returned, and Srila Puri Maharaj was waiting because he couldn't go, but he wanted to hear what Srila Sri Maharaj spoke about. So he would ask his disciples, so which was the Harikatha about? What Srila Sri Maharaj spoke about today? And the disciples were totally disturbed. Mm-hmm. And they said, Srila Sri Maharaj said that you are a Kanishtha Adhikari. That was their interpretation. They didn't even say, we think that. He said that you are a Kanishtha Adhikari. So some of them were thinking, okay, now Srila Puri Maharaj will get angry and will criticize Srila Sridhar Maharaj. So Srila Puri Maharaj at that moment, and if you know Srila Puri Maharaj, this will make much more sense. He was almost 100 years old, so he took his two hands and started to put his hands above his head, which was a whole event. It will take minutes. He will go with his hands on top of his head and close his eyes in a prayful mood. He will say, oh, Srila Sridhar Maharaj considers that I have some adhikar for bhakti. Jai Srila Sridhar Maharaj. And he starts to glorify Srila Sridhar Maharaj. So all the devotees realized, I mean, only an Uttam adhikari reacts in that way. You follow? He was thinking, I even have no adhikar for bhakti at all. But with that he was teaching, if you're a Kanishtha Adhikari, that's glorious in one way. No, that's the point. That's why I told this story. No? Because here Brahma is saying, even as a neophyte. And we may say, no, I don't want to be neophyte. I just want to be Paka, Vaishnava. But actually, if you understand what does it mean to have some Adhikar for bhakti, if you're really humble like Srila Puri Maharaj. My gosh. Srila Bhakti Pamapuri Maharaj ki jai. Bhakti Rakakshardev Goswami Maharaj ki jai. So then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes his purport, giving a summary of all the topics present in the different prayers of Brahma. I won't enter into that detail because that will be long. But basically he mentions how Brahma established pure bhakti, he censored jnana, he censored even mixed bhakti. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes saying, in the 24th verse, now we are in the 30th verse, in the 24th verse, Brahma discussed Santa Bhakti. In this verse, he's discussing Dasya Bhakti. From verse 31, the next one, he says, Brahma, who is about to fall in the ocean of Krishna's sweetness, he's just standing on the shore now, but he's about to fall and be swollen by the ocean of Krishna's sweetness. He will praise the devotees who are already immersed in that ocean. He's looking at the ocean and being sprinkled by that and just ready for entering. So from the next verse on, he will praise those who are immersed in that ocean. So in the next verse, we will see he will praise those who are immersed in Vatsalya Bhava. And then in the next verse after that, he will praise those who are immersed in Sakya Bhava. So this way, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is showing this sequence. No. Brahma spoke about Santa Bhava. Now he's speaking about Dasya Bhava. Then he will be speaking about remaining Bhavs, which are more and more prominent in Braj, Vatsalya, and Sakya, which is Brahma's own specific affinity in this case. No?
So is when you're already kind of in Goloka, is there...
What does it mean, already kind of?
Yeah, you mean, I mean, is there still evolution, like changing the mood, possibly, or do you just come in your already fulfilled...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you're just a plant and then you're still evolving into another swarup.
The very term sthayi bhav denies that possibility. Sthayi bhav means fixed
emotion. So that's one of the five ingredients of the experience of Bhakti Rasa. I don't want to enter into the complexities of that, but for you to experience Rasa, five things have to be there. Stayi Bhav, Vibhav, Anubhav, Sattvic Bhav, Vyabhichari Bhav. So Stayi Bhav means the defining emotion that you have in relation to Krishna, whether it's Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalyam, it's a particular fixed emotion that makes your identity in relation to him. So that's not changing. Mm-hmm. In that sense, that's not changing, but of course, it can evolve. In the sense, it's love for Krishna is not stuck in one place, and you can never love Krishna more. So that's a constant in eternity. That's an interesting idea, because the other day in Poland, I was speaking with one Swedish friend. She's studying philosophy, and she was telling me, I'm studying Spinoza, who is a Western philosopher, and he will say that the closer you get to the divine, the less change has to be there. Mm-hmm. Like implying here in the non-divine world, there is constant change, birth, death, time affecting everything. So ideally, the divine should be the opposite of that. Still, eternal, not changing. It seems that you don't agree with this, no. With the Spinoza. You have been affected by the bhakti disease or something. So, of course, our idea, the point was, exactly, in the transcendental world, there is always change, but not the type of change we know here. The types of change that you can always love Krishna more, and Krishna becomes more beautiful. And you can serve that increased beauty more and more. And there is no limits at every single step. What did Shikshastakam say? Pratipadam purna amrita swadhanam. Thank you. So that's, no? Pratipadam, at each step, purna amrita, the fullness of nectar, ashradhanam, is being relished. At every step, a new level of fullness, if you will. So we were speaking with this Swedish friend. He will tell me, so Spinoza say that God is constant, doesn't change. But we could say that change is his constant state. So in that sense, we can harmonize. Yeah, he's constant. In the sense that he's constantly changing in the context of prayer, not in the context of time affected by all age, but increasing he's always loving. That's a constant love, but love is such that it can always grow. So in that sense, we can say there is change, no? Or evolution, if you want to put it somehow. Let me conclude with one brief prayer and we close here, from Srinivas Suri, who is another commentator, well-known one from the Bhagavad. And he says, in this verse, Brahma means to say, only your crooked, silent glance, he's speaking to Krishna, is the cause of truly understanding the nature of your glory. That's somehow connected with the previous verse as well. Only your crooked, silent glance is the real cause to understand the nature of your glory. And as a result of that, we come to this verse, may I continually think of you like the Ganges goes to the ocean. So may I be possessed by a service attitude that goes unimpeded, without obstacles, no? Like the famous prayer of Kunti Devi. Tvai me nanyabhisaya matir madhu pater sakrit rati mud bahata adada dangi bhogam udambati. A very beautiful prayer by Kunti Devi, which is praying to Krishna, calling Krishna Madhupate, O Lord of Madhu, which we will kind of apply that to Braj as well, the Lord of Sweetness, Master of Sweetness. As the Ganges always flows to the ocean without any obstacle, like determined in that direction, may my attraction to you always go without being distracted in any other direction and flow at your lotus feet. That's we can finish in that note, no, with Kunti's prayers. So we conclude here. And tomorrow, in the next verse, just a few trailer of what's next, Brahma will specify his longing a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Again, here it seems that he's asking to be born in any circumstance as long as I remain a devotee. Dasya. The foundation, remember, dasya is a foundation. But we will see that behind this extreme expression of humility and surrender, all this is in a certain framework. He has some plan in mind. He has some goal to attain. So yes, Brahma is willing to be born even as an animal, but as we mentioned, in the perimeter of Braj. And inside that Braj, actually, he'll eventually say, actually I want this. So in the next verse, he will start to speak openly about Vrindavan, glorifying first the Vatsalya camp, and then going to his real aspiration in the context of becoming a friend of Krishna.
He's still with Sera, and tomorrow he will become sincere.
Okay.
No, in a way.
Yeah. Of course, all this is part of his sincerity.
Yes.
It's not that he's being like,
duplicitous.
I get your point, yeah. But his idea is becoming more and more transparent, if you will. But all this is laying foundation. So when he makes his official, present his official desire, all this background is there supporting that.
No? I could also say it needs the mood of unconditional mood. It's not that just I'm asking something. Look, every touch of bhakti with you is extremely precious.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why he's entering that.
Yeah, with caution, and we're making everything is worshipable here. No, it's not entering Vrindavan, it's not just a cheap thing that I want that and I don't care for anything else. But everything is precious. Everything is precious, but I want this especially precious thing. Something like that. Okay. So I don't know if there are any questions. Okay, there have been some questions, but we can entertain a few more.
You said one has to enter in the Prakat Lila. Because I thought Aprakat means spiritual, material, and Prakat means spiritual. No, it's not like this.
Aprakat means in manifest, and Prakat means manifest. So Jiva Goswami explains this in Krishna Sandarbha. The Leela has these two expressions, sometimes connected to places called Golok and Gokul. You have the Aprakat Leela, which is the unmanifest pastimes in Vrindavan that we cannot perceive here. And the Prakat Leela is the Leela of Krishna performed on earth, sometimes called Bhoma Leela also, which in one sense are non-different from each other. But those are the terms, basically, just to have them clear, yeah.
Is it like Gram and Dham, kind of.
Gram
the
and
gram,
dham?
Yes, the gram is kind of on the surface, and the dham is more underneath.
The term dham will be applied to the two of them. No, we don't say dham is there, here is no dham. But of course, we will be told that in order for you to perceive the dham even here, you have to go beyond the surface for sure, because in the surface, the dham seems to be dirty. And there's to be plastic and so many things. Where are the Kalpa Riksha trees here? And where are the Chintamani land and so on? So you need to go beyond the surface. No? Like once Dr. Swarup Sridharmaraj said, that's why the monkeys are stealing your glasses in Vrindavan. No? To teach you, you cannot see Vrindavan with glasses and air drilling glass. So you have to develop inner vision. Rimanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. That's the anjana you have to have. First, jnana anjana, guru will give you jnana anjana, magyana timirandasa, jnana anjana. And after jnana anjana, shastra chakshu, a scriptural eye, you will have prema anjana, the other salve of love. That one you cannot get in Loi Bazaar. not in the external Loi Bazaar. If you go beyond Loi Bazaar, you will find what's actually taking place in that part of Vrindavan, the prema anjana. Okay. Something else?
Is this Prakat Leela only on this planet, or is it on every planet?
What is revealed in Shastra is that the Prakat Leela of Sri Krishna is taking place only in planet Earth, but it's always going on in some planet Earth, in some universe. Because we have one planet Earth in this universe, but they are not on, this is not the only universe. Our tradition speaks about multiverse. So in every universe, there is one planet Earth. And there are unlimited universes, which mean unlimited planet Earths. So every time Krishna finishes one Prakat Lila, he starts immediately in another planet Earth. So there's always a Prakat Lila going on somewhere in some planet Earth. So the point is, when a devotee reaches this point of Raga Bharma Chandrika mentions, of entering the Prakat Lila, there will be an available Prakat Lila on some planet Earth.
You don't have to wait.
That's my point. Once in a day of Brahma or something, like it's waiting in some limbo or something because, okay, Kali Yuga, and now Satya, Trita, Dwapara, okay, let's go now. There's always some Krishna Lila going on one planet Earth in one universe.
So in the universe, in all these universes, is only just one planet Earth. How do we, other people on this planet system, come to Krishna? They must always go to Earth unless they can't get to Krishna. I'm a bit confused because then it's just, I mean, universe is huge. And you have only this very small planet which gives you possibility.
Yeah, I get your point. But I would recommend to begin with, do not try to calculate all the things regarding like tight number of people in one planet and one universe, because let's say in this universe, let's give an example, in this universe, to begin with, the Shastra is saying, yes, planet Earth is like the ideal platform for culturing the proper mood, because to go to Krishna in Braj, it has to be a specific sadhana corresponding to that. And that sadhana corresponds with a mood which is not a lila, which is human-like pastimes. So planet Earth is the human planet, if you will. In other planets, there are other species, other moods, other psychologies. Of course, if Krishna wants to give his that attainment in other places, it can be happening. It's not that he's limited and it's not possible. But the general rule is planet Earth will be the place to from which to go. So, for example, I don't know, like Gita says, if you go to heavenly planets, you exhaust your pious credit and eventually you go to planet Earth and from there you can attain that goal. But my point is, again, it's not everyone will come to this planet Earth. There's not all this only planet Earth. No? So someone may be advanced and it may be in another planet. Let's think about whatever possibilities can be. And they may be born in a planet Earth where Krishna is executing his lila. It's not that they have to come to this particular planet Earth. So there are so many planet Earths. So there, we have to understand that we are speaking about not geographical movements, but movement in terms of consciousness. So consciousness is not constrained by only one planet here, only this planet there, but according to the consciousness we have, there will be a corresponding destiny in that connection. So no problem, Krishna will make all arrangements. Yes?
I am a little bit confused about the fact that to born as an animal, at least you have bhakti. Mm-hmm. You're born as an animal.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm confused because I know that only in the human form, mm-hmm, you can attain bhakti. How can an animal attain bhakti being an animal? This is my,
mm-hmm, only. We didn't say that only human form you can attain bhakti. We say that human form is like the ideal form to take full advantage of bhakti. As a general rule, again, we always will find exceptions in Shastra, but the general rule is that. But it doesn't mean that, I don't know, if you have a dog in your house or a cat or whatever, you are a bhakta, and that animal, that jiva in that body is constantly receiving bhakti samskars, devotional impressions. Of course, the animal may not be fully aware what's going on, but some effect is there. There's a famous example that Ramanujacharya was with his devotees, and he threw some food to the
fish,
to the water, and a fish jumped and took that and immediately attained by Kuntha form. And all his disciples were like, wow, how did it happen? He said, well, he didn't commit aparad. He entered in touch with bhakti without aparad and attained full mercy. Again, it may sound like an extreme example, but those examples show the things are possible. Bhakti has no restrictions into affecting the Atma, if you will. It goes beyond this different formality, if you will. So,
Rasikananda initiated an elephant. And he really then, the bhakti power was so strong that it was going beyond the covering of the dull animal form.
Exactly. Because one thing is the animal form, but behind that, if you will, is the Atma. So if the Atma, the Atma's potential is activated by contact with a very powerful personality, so many things can happen. I'm not going too far. We are in human form, but for many times we have behaved worse than animals, maybe. And maybe bhakti came to our lives, and we were not that human at that moment. And we felt the touch of bhakti.
Even grace and bhakti. Bhakti, I see it as a different thing, like something you choose to do somehow.
Well, bhakti and grace, in one sense, are synonymous in the sense that, I mean, we choose to do bhakti, but first bhakti chooses to approach us. It's not that one day you wake up, you don't have an idea what's bhakti. Now I will dedicate myself to Krishna bhakti. We don't have an idea what's Krishna bhakti. So we have our will and we choose bhakti, but bhakti has her own will and he chooses to intercept us. And then we have our will to choose what to do with that. And as we said the other day, grace first is coming itself, taking the initiative, and our part is, how do I choose to reply to that? How do I choose to reciprocate? So yeah, I would say that, no? like the famous song of Lord Chandas about Nitai, about Gaur Nitai Param Karuna, Bahu Dui Jai Nitai Gaur Chanda. At one point he's saying, the stones are melting, the animals are crying by your grace. And I'm feeling, I am the stone and I am the animal. But I'm not crying and I'm not melting yet. So I'm worse than a stone and an animal in human form. So it's not about the form of the form of the vehicle, but the type of consciousness. So bhakti can create.
If you see the Indian cow, especially in Vrindavan Dham,
okay,
they have so much bhakti.
There we are speaking about, again, inhabitants of the Dham. There's one story, we can close with this one. This is very interesting one, this connection. This story that involves one disciple of Srila Prabhupada. He already passed away. He was, I think, the first temple president in Krishna Valar Mandir, and eventually accepted sannyas and passed away in Vrindavan. He was known as Sirota Kasai Vishnu Maharaj. So he was Grihastha for a long time. And he will live in Vrindavan with his family. And once his dog passed away, he had a dog. So the dog died in Vrindavan. And he had this real conviction, this is not a dog. This is a Brajavasi. So what should I do now? How to honor this occasion? So he went to one sadhu there. And the sadhu said, you have to to organize a Mahotsav, Tirubhav Mahotsav, to celebrate the passing away of the dog. Okay, he said, how to do that? He said, you have to prepare prasad, and you have to go all throughout Braj and invite all the dogs of Vrindavan to go to the celebration. It sounds strange, right? he doesn't speak the language of dogs. It's not that he was barking to the dogs and telling, he was telling them, this day, at this time, in this place, this is happening. And he went, he had faith in this house, so he went and went down and started to speak to the dogs, to all the dogs he will say, invite them, like in two, next day, this time, my house, we are celebrating the passing away of this dog, this residence. So he did that, he returned and started to cook and prepare everything. So the next day he puts all the rows of plates. And the time is getting closer to the time. Nobody's coming. He's waiting. And suddenly one dog starts to come. And he sits in front of one plate. And the second dog starts to come. He sits in another plate. Third dog, fourth dog. All the dogs start to come. And they filled all the two rows. There was one also one plate on the head of the two rows. So he was serving prasad to all the dogs. No? But they don't start. They are not starting to take prasad. So he's like wondering, what's going on? Nothing, nothing. And after a few minutes comes one last dog, who was kind of the senior of the community.
Wow.
And he sits on the head of the table, was on the floor, right? And he serves prasad to that dog. That dog takes a little bit, and all the other dogs start to eat now. So, and it is said, he himself was telling the story, and after all the senior dog finished, all the dogs finished, he woke up, left, all of them woke up, left. And this devotee, what he did, he went to all the place of the dogs and started to take all the remnants from the dogs. And that was his feast. He started to honor the remnants of the Brajavasi dogs, crying, honoring. This one, only one story that shows you how an animal can have bhakti, just to put it simply, more, much more than that. So especially if we speak in the context of of the Dham. So every time we go to the Dham, we should be careful not to forget where we are and who they are, basically, and who we want to be. Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Shri Gurudev ki jai. Shri Man Mahaprabhu ki jai. Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. Shri Guru Gadadhar ji ki jai. Shri Radha Govinda Dev ki jai. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda, Hari 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 Go, Vancha Kalpata Rubyashta, Vipasandu Vyavacha, Atitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo, Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda ki jai, Gaur Hari.